This week, virtually every asset class lifted off the launch pad. Gold is up 5% already in just the first month of the year. Welcome back to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. Chris Walczyk here. We have another big show lined up for you with Rich Dad Robert Kiyosaki, penned Second Chance for Your Money, Your Life, and Our World. He expects the U.S. share slide to continue this year and thinks the yellow metal has finished its downturn. He's adding to his gold stockpile, noting that the biggest risk that investors have today is not owning gold. And then Marin Alexoff returns to the show. He prefers a 20 to 30% gold allocation in his investment portfolio and thinks the risk-to-reward ratio is becoming very enticing for the yellow metal. Plus, Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Well, mostly sunny skies appeared over the New York COMEX exchange this week. Investors worldwide turned to the gold safe haven amid increased stock market volatility. The metal reached a 12-week high of 1127 on Wednesday following more dovish than expected FOMC meeting comments. By Friday's close, the yellow metal had added $18 for the week, not quite 2%, finishing at 1116 an ounce. Silver finished at 1424, adding 22 cents, up 1.5%. The XAU Gold in Silver Index flew to the top of the list, adding 12% for the week, up 5 points at 46. And West Texas Intermediate crude also gained $1.50, about 4%, finishing around 33.60 per barrel. The top story moving the markets this week came from the FOMC meeting announcement on Wednesday. Dr. Yellen et al. Held rates steady as expected, but it was their tone, I think, on their forward guidance that surprised many watchers. Fed governors said they would be monitoring international economic conditions closely. Clearly, they're concerned by the slowdown in the EU and Asia, and it appears that only one more rate hike will unfold this year, probably up to only 0.75%. In fact, the next March Fed Funds futures contract indicate 80% odds the Fed will hold rates steady at 0.5%. Here's the simple version. The Fed looks nervous after watching the stocks in the HGX housing markets simply implode after their first rate hike in about 10 years. I think they might be too proud to even whisper a mea culpa, but their actions are speaking volumes. The news was the perfect panacea for gold, which added 5% in January alone, now that the threat of higher rates seems to be dissipating. The news sent South African producers leaping by 35% their major index for the month. That's the most in over 20 years. Harmony Gold Mining shares are up 87%. Meanwhile, in global economic news, the greenback strengthened on Friday following a surprise announcement by the BOJ, the Bank of Japan, to adopt a negative interest rate policy. That's right, probably the first time in history that similar to the EU finance ministers. Plus, new orders for U.S. durable goods posted the biggest drop in about 16 months in December. That suggested the Fed may soon reverse its interest rate course, following a similar path as the BOJ and the ECB. Investors will be watching the next U.S. unemployment figure closely. The jobs report for January is due on February 5th, next Friday. Bottom line on the precious metals. Well, virtually every commodity rallied this week. From crude oil, platinum up 5%. The CRB index shot up. Let's look outside commodities. The housing index finally caught a bid. The U.S. dollar market. I mean, the list just goes on and on. It appears that the deflation story might, at least for the time being, be passing somewhat with these supportive and more dovish policies from the BOJ and, of course, the Fed. Policymakers seem to have convinced the bulls that the global economy may soon receive a fresh infusion, viewed as, of course, inflationary, and good news for the precious metals. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, sunny skies appeared over the New York Stock Exchange. Equities investors were also pleased with the lower odds of a rate hike this year. The Dow finished at 16,466, up 373, about 2.5% for the week. Well, the S&P 500 ended up at 1940, up 33, not quite 2%, and the Nasdaq picked up 23 points, closing at 4613. The equities bull shrugged off the sluggish durable goods orders figures, choosing to focus instead on the sea of liquidity that could soon be unleashed on the global indices. I can't be the only analyst out here who was surprised by the sea change in the Fed Fund futures implied probabilities in just the past few weeks. I mean, the odds of a significant rate hike in 2016 have virtually collapsed. And this, I think, is very bullish for equities, not to mention the precious metals. Bottom line, on Wall Street. Well, our seven-component sentiment index certainly improved from the extremely fearful territory up into the fearful. That indicates that a bounce is clearly underway. Plus, the CBOT, VIX, and VVIX confirmed our thoughts last week of a market bounce. How much will the equities rally? Stay tuned. And coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with Rich Dad, Robert Kiyosaki, and CEO of Roslyn Capital, Marin Alexov. Alexov of Roslyn Capital, CEO. Welcome back.
Well, thank you.
Start today with your outlook on the sector. You know, it's a new year. We've had several tough years. Some things are worth waiting for. Give us your outlook, please, on the precious metals.
Well, I've changed. My outlook has changed a little bit since the first 2 weeks here. With the talk now that, you know, recession might be looming and so forth, then you have to start thinking, is QE4, is that a possibility? Is the government going to step in? If that's a big if, but that's a big game changer for gold. And as an investor, if I'm going to look into gold, the last thing I want to do is be caught on this thing, because there's just no way of knowing. When the Fed has the meeting, they can just turn 380 and go, you know what, we're going to raise it a quarter, we're going to lower it. So you need to, in my opinion, be protected before something like that happens, because I don't think anyone's going to, you know, announce that beforehand. So I'm watching this market closely. I did rebound today, but if the earning reports now they're saying is going to be weak, if the unemployment number starts going the other way again, you never know. They might actually start helping again.
So you're not going to take the Fed officials at their words, our policymakers, that we could see as much as 100 basis points increase, and it was just a one-and-done scenario at the Fed?
I don't think they're anticipating this kind of a correction worldwide. I mean, China's a big if. If that thing starts going south, if the U.S. follows, if the earning reports get worse and worse, because the punch bowl is gone. This is the first time in a long, long period with no free money. Now, valuations of companies become an issue. You have to actually look at the balance sheet. You have to start looking at are they actually making money. So investors are going to have to actually do diligence now to actually invest. So there's going to be way, way more volatile, because the free money to support all this is not there. So we don't know how this is going to react. And I'm sure the Fed is going to have to do whatever is necessary to make sure this economy doesn't stall completely. Last thing they want to see is unemployment start spiking again and people start being laid off. And the last thing we need is another Lehman moment. So, yes, I don't think the Fed is 100% clear what's going to happen.
The spike up in yield certainly has investors on the edge of their seats. No one wants to see the junk bonds imploding. It definitely has been a sea change moment. If the economic conditions do deteriorate, I think it's really almost last resort. I mean, it's the Federal Reserve. And avoid the next Lehman or MF Global or who knows, Bear Stearns moment.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at oil prices, they're almost below $30, right? How are they going to hit their 2% target with that going on? Two, where's all the money that everyone's supposed to be saving, supposed to put back into the economy? Why is not that happening? Consumer stocks are not doing well right now. The prediction for consumer, for the companies, which is 2/3 of the economy, is not reflecting the big savings that everyone's supposed to have in gas. Bottom line, it doesn't matter if it's a dollar gas. There's no money. People just don't have the money, and that's what this is happening. When you take away the free money, which basically, in my opinion, is an illusion to begin with, next 2-3 months is going to be very volatile. And then put China on top of that thing. What's going to happen? I don't think anyone has real numbers from China. All you have to do is sit back and wait, and that's when you're going to have those 7-8% drops in a day. So if if I'm a gold guy out there, hey, diversification is everything. I mean, you shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket, but if you have 20% in gold or 30, whatever you feel comfortable with, hey, better safe than sorry, because this time around, I don't think you're going to have time to react much.
I like to hear a guest who's completely transparent. Jim Rogers, we just had him on the show, says the same thing as you. We don't know. We don't have a crystal ball. We do see some footprints. We see some fingerprints. Let's start increasing our portfolio exposure to the metals. And every time there's a sharp drop or a decline, you can actually use that as a buying opportunity. What do you think about the equities, the shares, and the precious metals? Are they starting to show a relative value?
Some of the mining companies I see today spiked. I don't know why, but I haven't really looked into it. But again, there's a price. The more of them consolidate, the more of them get off the market, the less they're going to produce. The prices will at some point hit a floor. And at that point, there's going to be buying opportunities for these guys. Again, that's not my area, but I think that especially the funds, the ETFs, is going to probably start benefiting. Because I look at more from a, you know, regular guys, consumer, you know, investors out there, is that you're doing the gold, you have 23%, and you have 70%. Percent of your money in.
Of course you want equities to do well, and if they do, great. But God forbid something should happen, that 20% will see, it will balance out that. It's not about, hey,
equities is not going to do well, I need to diversify completely, everything's falling apart. You still want equity to do well, because that's the majority of your portfolio. Again, gold, in my opinion, is there for safety and security. If you can make some money along the line, great, but it's there for those big moments when you need it.
West Texas Intermediate crude testing 30. Who knows? Are we headed 25, 20? On the one hand, that's great for the consumer, as you mentioned, a huge component of the country. But on the other hand, it's tough on the S&P 500, which has energy components in that index. It can be challenging as well for the Midwest because of all the fracking interests that are being decimated by this drop in energy prices. So
trying to keep the price down. You know, I keep hearing that the reason is to get the fracking guys out of business. But, you know, at the same time, I think it's more to it. The demand is slowing down. There is no demand for it, like in China and so forth, because of their slowdown. So at the end of the day, yeah, the Saudis might try to get the frackers out and fight Russia on this to keep the oil as low as possible. But at the same time, I just don't see the demand either. Because if all the economies were booming like they're supposed to, or everyone's saying they will, then oil wouldn't be at $30. It's not possible. We've seen that before. It'll be $100 and so on. The U.S. wouldn't be at 1%, 2%. It will be at 7%, 8%.
If I see the energy level at around $20 area, I'm thinking long-term equity options, you know, 2-3 years out.
Absolutely. At $50, $20. Remember back in the day, so how can oil be $15, $20? And I think it's a lifetime opportunity at that point if it goes that down low, especially long-term. In my opinion, you cannot go wrong unless everything just implodes. But then you have the gold.
One of our guests pointed out recently, Nick Barishev, read all kinds of research and studies noting that gold, the yellow metal, holds up remarkably well during deflation. In fact, his information shows that it does better during deflation than inflation. But the reason for the concern and the misinformation, even disinformation and confusion, stems from the fact that gold does drop in dollar terms, in currency terms. But it drops by such a smaller factor than real estate and other commodities and paper assets that people forget to adjust it, not in terms of the currency, but relative to competing asset classes. And when you do that, wow, are you glad you have a lot of yellow metal during deflation.
I mean, gold did very, very well during deflation. It's always been the case, actually. There is a little bit of a misconception that, hey, you know, gold pops when you have inflation. It does, because people are scared of losing the value of the dollar, purchasing power, basically. That's why they go to the metal. But again, your equities will go up, so will real estate, but it just buys less of goods. It's too much money chasing too few goods. So at the same time, even if you have gold, yes, it will work as long as you don't cash it out. It becomes more expensive to get it, but it gets you less. Gold has done really well for us during deflation for less. I mean, if you look at 8, 9, 10, that's all it was. We haven't had inflation in a long, long time. We can't even get to 2%. The gold's done remarkably well. I mean, let's not forget, less than what, 2017, gold was what, $700, it's still up 20-30% since then.
Or go back to, you know, the dot-com implosion. Gold was around 250 an ounce.
Absolutely. So, I mean, yeah, gold in my opinion has this staircase. It goes up, it'll drop back, but it very rarely goes back to where it was, down to, say, $700-$600. I just don't see that happening. I think, what's his name, either Mark Faber or Rogers said that we'll never see gold below 1,000 in our lifetime. I think he said it, I don't quote me on who, which, I think about 6-7 years ago. And that might, you know, might be true. It's good for a lot of, it's also good for, from our point of view, for investors that are on the fence on gold, because, you know, I think anything below 1,000, a lot more people are going to feel more comfortable diversifying into gold, for sure.
You know, I mean, how could you miss the opportunity to pick up real sound money when there's so many question marks in the currency market? I mean, there's a lot of nervousness in the Eurozone with negative interest rates. The yuan, a competing reserve currency, according to the IMF.
They're also long. I mean, there's, you know, I go to conventions. I'm going now in February 4th to Money Fair in Berlin. You know, there's a rumor in the Chinese, they're saying, you know, they're doing the yuan, and then they're going to peg it to gold to stabilize. It's a little far-fetched, but everyone's saying this is why they're so transparent now about how much they're buying, selling. They get a reserve currency, and then they're going to start moving to back it X amount percent by gold.
Wouldn't it be interesting to find out that they had tremendously more gold than they've reported? Talk about changing the whole global currency, just turn everything upside down. Yeah, because I think they've got something like 3,300 tons is what they're saying right now. But what if it was 10 times that or 5 times that? There's been considerable speculation. Gold flowing in through Hong Kong, and it's going into these unknown sources. I really wonder if it's not the People's Bank of China behind that.
I went to Hong Kong last year, you know. I mean, if you look at the physical gold market, I mean, I think U.S. is like 5% of the global market. Hong Kong is 25%. It's pandemonium over there. I mean, there's a whole different attitude when it comes to gold. They don't trust nothing but gold. And obviously, when you have such a volatility in the world, you don't know. If I'm Chinese, hey, we don't know the numbers. We don't know what's going to happen. It's more of a gambler attitude. So gold is something that they really see as a protection against their own currency, their own economies, because over there, no one trusts anyone. For them to actually move into backing this by gold one day, I don't think it's that far-fetched. It will definitely calm down the entire population there, I can tell you that.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with the listening audience today, anything on in 2016 that they should have on their radar screen?
Just look at the economy. If it looks like it's going into recession, don't be surprised if the government steps in one more time here and changes course. And be ahead of it. I will not wait. I will be ahead of it.
Well, Marin Alexov, Roslyn Capital, CEO of the company there, and it'll be interesting to see how everything plays out this year.
It's going to be a very, very volatile year.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show the best-selling author of the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book series. Welcome back.
Thank you.
The beginning of a new year, you like to go on record sometimes with forecast prognostications, your outlook for the new year.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I wrote in my latest book, Second Chance, last year, a year ago, and I said the Euro or the European Union would come apart. I also said in 2000 that in 2016, the biggest stock market crash in history would occur. And in 2005, I predicted the real estate crash, which came in 2007.
What exactly led you to make the 2016 call on equities?
Well, that was based upon facts, not anything else. The 401k is flawed. It's called ERISA, E-R-I-S-A. Is that baby boomers, my generation, must start withdrawing funds in 2016 when they turn 70 and a half. So when people talk about the stock market, they're generally talking about capital gains or the stock market going up. Well, the market can't go up every year if baby boomers are pulling money out. And once people realize the flaw in the law, the 401k, then it makes no sense to keep your money in there for the long term. Investing for the long term in the stock market today could be the worst thing you could do.
Advisors always tell you to keep your money in the casino, don't they?
Of course. You know, like I've been listening to this Davos and all this stuff, and they're all saying everything's fine, don't worry, economy's strong.
The FOMC, we've got a meeting this week. They're not going to raise rates this week, but likely in March, you know, we're going to keep inching higher. Is that just a non-event, or do you think that will have a significant impact on the economy and the market?
I think the thing that most people don't watch is called the Plunge Protection Team, which came in with Reagan in 1987. And what happens is every time the market crash, money mysteriously comes in and props it up. So to me, that's more interesting because, you know, last couple of weeks, the market's been down and like magic, money appears and the market goes back up again. And my only question to your listeners is how long can they keep going doing that? Because, it's, you know, Japan, the Prime Minister of Japan in Davos, Switzerland, just said we can just use QE. Well, it hasn't worked. You know, their market, their economy is still collapsing. It didn't work for Germany in 1923, I think. It doesn't work.
You talked about the Eurozone unraveling at the seams. Obviously, we're going to see some capital flows into the U.S. and particularly equities because their stock market has just been a disaster. Do you think that's what's helping keep U.S. equities afloat?
I'm sure it is, but I'm not really good in equities because I'm not a gambler, you know, and I don't like it when I can't control the asset itself. For example, when I have a piece of real estate, I control it. I know the real numbers to it. And when I look at a financial statement of, let's say, Apple, I really don't know what's going on. It's mirrors, you know. I think the good news for you guys, the old gold guys, is I'm back to buying gold again. I think we've bottomed. So if the currencies start coming down, which I expect they are, then gold goes up. The dollar may not rally next to gold. But if I was holding euro right now, I'd be buying gold.
Gold can rise along with the dollar. We've seen that plenty of times in the past.
Well, I'm not even concerned about the up and down of gold, the price of gold. I just want to know how many ounces I've got. And so lately, you know, I don't buy ETFs and all that stuff because I don't control what they hold. So I have my secret vaults hidden away, and I have my gold there. Nobody knows them. But I'd rather have the real gold and real silver rather than IOUs, you know?
Yeah, as you say, you know, it's unencumbered. But also, you know, there's just too many ways for them to get their fingers on what you've worked a lifetime to save.
I look at gold as not money, but as an insurance policy against the stupidity and arrogance of our leaders, who actually believe, you know, these intellectuals, you know, like throughout history, people have hated intellectuals because they actually think they're so smart they can control the economy. And that's what Bernanke did. That's what Paulson did. These intellectuals actually believe they're smarter than the economy, and they're not. So that's why I buy gold, because I'm not Republican or Democrat, but you know what I'm saying? He's not really a real person.
You talk about the potential bottom in the precious metals. It looks kind of positive. You know, we've had a 4 or 5 really rough years, silver dipping down to around $13 an ounce. You're not terribly worried about it, you know, if we saw some more downside, because frankly, who believes in the currency anyway? So what you really want to do is value your wealth in terms of ounces and not in terms of dollars. Is that a fair statement?
That's exactly it. And the more, the further it goes down, the more ounces I buy. You know, it's a lot of people speak out against dollar cost averaging. But I like it when it's going down because every time I have a few extra dollars, I just buy gold. Why do I buy gold? Because I won't spend it.
Yeah, that's what Jim Rogers, you know, in Singapore and Mark Faber in Thailand are always telling us. You know, they love the lower prices because, it, as you say, it gives them a lower cost average.
Right. And then those guys who say gold is, you know, the barbaric relic and all this stuff. Well, that's their opinion. But most of those guys are what I call the intellectuals. You know, the guys who actually think their brains are more powerful than the ocean currents.
It's a good metaphor because it really is the tide that's brought them their wealth. And once again, they're confusing, i.e. the higher stock prices where everything's been led along by monetary easing, right, and low rates with these government policies.
That's like, I agree wholeheartedly. I was looking at pictures of this last storm that passed. And I saw Manaloking, New Jersey, you know, they're flooded again. And really, that's what we're looking at. I mean, all of us are looking at it right now. This market is so manipulated. The question is, who has the power to continue to manipulate it? And I don't know of anybody. So that's why I like gold and silver.
You've been a big fan of real estate. You know, the Philadelphia Housing Index has plunged sharply. That tends to be a precursor of, you know, the Case-Shiller Index in the next few months. Do you see some good buying opportunities for the American consumer as far as housing goes?
You're always looking for a bargain, so prices going down is good. You know, I mean, Case-Shiller are for consumers, if you know what I mean. It's Mr. and Mrs. New Jersey looking for a house. And what I'm looking for, apartment houses that REITs, REITs, are dumping. And right now, I don't know if you know, but apartment houses are the hottest things in the real estate market today. And Mr. and Mrs. New Jersey don't buy apartment. And, you know, I don't speculate on my house, you know, my residential property, because that's consumption. You know, when people say, oh, the value of my house went up, I said, that means you're a consumer. You're not an investor. You know, I don't really care what the price of my house is. I just like my house.
Back on track here a bit, you know, we're looking at 2016. Not a big fan of stocks. You've been on, you know, on the right side of that market for quite some time.
I got out fully in March. It was probably one of the smartest things I've done. You know, I didn't make any money, but I didn't lose much money. So that's really good.
That is solid. And, you know, the other way to look at it is people, you know, taking a longer-term perspective, picking up some precious metals, you get that diversification, you can sleep a little more soundly at night, and you also know that you're getting silver at 66% off, gold, you know, 40, 45% off the highs. So, you know, where's the risk there?
The risk is not having it. And that's why I'm laughing about Saturday Night Live, and I can't tell Fox from Saturday Night Live, because those guys are a bunch of cartoons up there now. And those are the guys you're going to count on for the economy. Give me a break. I mean, right now, I trust in gold and I trust in silver. I don't trust the stock market. I don't trust the Fed. I don't trust our leaders. I don't trust the EU to stay apart, to not come apart. You have Puerto Rico in serious trouble. I mean, how many other things have you got out there? And you look at the national debt, it's now $20 trillion. If you want to believe Saturday Night Live characters, then you just keep believing. But I'd rather have gold than silver.
Looks like we're going to have some better times ahead. Any other sectors or markets that you're watching closely?
Well, it's the same thing. I always focus on one or two things. Focus stands for follow one course until successful, FOCUS. I don't chase around. I understand the real estate market. I understand, you know, how many people are renting and how many people are not renting. That's what I understand. And as far as oil goes, you know, I invest in oil. I'm looking at oil again because oil at this level is really a good deal. But I don't invest in price. When I invest in oil, I get an 80% tax break day one. So I invest $1 million. I get a 32% return, $32,000 return almost instantly. So nothing to do with price. It has to do with focus. How much do you know? It's the same as gold and silver. The more you know and the less you trust our leaders, the more I like gold and silver. I don't trust our leaders. If you trust them, stay in the markets, you know, buy, hold, and pray.
You know, you talk about the crude oil, and even if we did drop another 20, 30, 50% or more, I mean, the risk to reward is just getting very enticing around the $30 area. I mean, it looks like a good portfolio addition here.
Well, there's something else I would like to caution people on is that there was a lot of countries going broke because of those prices. Saudi Arabia's in trouble. Russia's in trouble. The oil, you know, Nigeria's in trouble. Colombia. So when you look at that, you have to ask yourself, if I was Putin right now and my country is going broke, what am I going to do next? You start wars. You know, because Saudi Arabia, they want to take their Aramco public. Because why? Because they're going broke. You know, it's time to cash in. So I would not look so small term or, you know, minutia. Look at what's going on across the world. Russia will go broke at $30 a barrel. And if that happens, he's going to start a war. So that's going to be good for gold, silver, and oil.
When this happened, as oil was sliding, the ruble was shot through the roof. And anybody holding gold protected their purchasing power by something like 100, 150%.
The same thing happened in 1918, 1923 in Germany. The people that dumped the Reichsmark and moved it into Swiss francs made a fortune. The people that held Reichsmark got wiped out. So that's why they, you know, the old saying goes is that the pessimist in, you know, that my friends who are Jewish, they always say the pessimist left Germany and moved to New York. That's what happens when you sit and hope and pray that your leaders are in charge of the show. The difference was the currency. You see, as long as they moved into dollars, my Jewish friends did well. The Jewish guys that hang on to the Reichsmark got wiped out. The point, as you and I know, the dollar is toxic. It's worse than the, you know, the water of Flint, Michigan. The more dollars you hold, the more sick you get. And that's what's going on to the world economy. So that's why I would, if you're not in gold and silver, listen to this program. You may want to put your toe in and figure it out. But you get to look at the big picture, too. There's a lot of countries going broke now. How about pension plans like CalPERS, you know, the California Public Servants Pension? They don't have enough money to pay the baby boomers. They're going broke. Look at Yellow Cab just declared bankruptcy. You got to be kidding me. What's going on in the world is not just a matter of what you're holding on to. You got to pay it. Wake up and look at what's going on in the world. Japan's going down. China's going down. It really is a time to start looking bigger, not smaller. This price of oil is massive. There are whole countries going broke. Think about that.
So you think that that implies we could get a big rebound in crude oil?
We're going to probably have some war. But when Russia can't pay its bills, it can't pay its, you know, its retirement, like most of these, you know, in Puerto Rico, it's the guys, and that's what's going on all over the world. That's why I mentioned CalPERS, you know, the California State Pension Plan and all that. The question is, can they afford to pay out what they owe the retirees? I don't think so. And so with that reason, I think we're very unstable, and I want to go to what's stable, which is gold and silver and oil. So that's what that's how I look at. You know, I don't look at apartment houses. I look at it as a place to live. You know, all those immigrants who are running from Syria across Europe right now, they'd give anything for a place to sleep right now.
That's exactly right. I mean, even a tent would be better than nothing.
Yeah, so low income, I'm basically, you know, low income housing. And guess what? A lot of people need low-income housing.
That's brilliant. And one other thing here to corroborate your thoughts on war. I noticed a few weeks ago the market was caving, but I was looking for stocks for, you know, my newsletter. One of the ones that stood out was Lockheed Martin. Every stock on my list was collapsing. High quality, blue chip, solid earnings growth. I mean, everything you want, a good, you know, evaluation. But Lockheed Martin holding up well as everything else is imploding. And that kind of makes one think maybe the war drums are about to start up again.
Well, it's called the military-industrial complex that in 1960 Eisenhower warned us of, that the business of America is war. As long as you understand that, there will be no peace. So war is very, very, very profitable.
Any parting comments for our listeners today?
Just watch Europe. You know, as I said, the euro is going to collapse. And when that happens, it's going to make gold more attractive, but also U.S. equities. And so I think the rush is going to, the big boom will be America, but I don't like to play that kind of stuff. I'd rather play what's kind of certain.
You want to hold on to, you know, something solid, something tangible, unencumbered, precious metals.
The reason I use debt and I don't use equities, you know, debt versus equity, I'm always using debt because debt's tax-free. And if you can understand that, you're a little bit wiser, because taxes will ultimately be your highest expense, ultimately. So anything I cannot pay taxes on, I'll look at. So oil, I'll pay no tax. Debt, I'll pay no tax. I love that.
Anything in particular you'd like to share with the listeners today? You'd like to direct them maybe over to Amazon.com?
I would read my latest book, Second Chance, because in there you'll see graphs and pictures of what's going on in the economy today. And a picture is worth a thousand words, but unfortunately there in political times is millions of words and no pictures. Just look at my book, Second Chance, and these are government charts, and you can see what's really happening, and then you can say to yourself, I need to do something different. For example, people talk about the great crash of 1929. If you look at my book, Second Chance, you'll see that the great crash of 29 was not a, in the first 10 years of this century, we've had three major, major crashes. Two were Wall Street, one was real estate. A bigger crash is coming now. So that's why you should take a look at Second Chance and then make your own mind up.
Second Chance, you've got to get some copies at Amazon.com and over at the Rich Dad websites as well. Robert Kiyosaki, it's always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, James Turk, founder of GoldMoney.com, author of The Coming Collapse of the Dollar and How to Profit from It, as well as additional tomes. Welcome back, James Turk.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be with you.
Thank you. Maybe we could start off today with market volatility. I think that's really putting it nicely, and certainly an increase in unexpected moves, and not only in the currencies, equities, China's stock exchange at the Shanghai Index. Really, I think the model for almost 1987 style meltdown. Can you give us an idea, an overview of what you see happening, and you know, maybe any of the fundamental drivers that might be underpinning this volatility?
Yeah, I think the volatility comes because of the level of debt that we're seeing throughout the global economy, you know, at the government level, corporate level, and even at the individual level. There's just too much debt. When you have that debt, the volatility is a consequence. Instead of, you know, relying on savings, money is being created out of thin air in order to perpetuate a system that's become unsustainable. The only reason why the debt crisis hasn't been more severe is simply because interest rates are much lower than what would be a normal rate. You know, interest rates are below the inflation rate instead of above the inflation rate. So if you put money in a bank and you deposit it for a year, the interest income you earn is less than the inflation rate, so you're losing purchasing power. I think as a consequence of what we're seeing now, Chris, in terms of stock markets, you know, gyrating all over the place, that we're probably going into a 2008 type situation. And this is probably going to play itself out over the next several months.
Well, speaking of playing out over the next several weeks to months, September 16th, about 2 weeks from today, we haven't had a rate increase, as I understand it, from approximately 2006, approaching a decade. There's a lot of ambiguity here. On the one hand, I have a number of guests who are adamantly convinced that there will be no rate hike whatsoever. And then on the other hand, there's those who oppose the thought and their thought and think, well, rates are going to move much higher. I'd like your thoughts on whether or not you think we will see a quarter point rate hike in September and perhaps another rate hike in December, whether or not the markets have discounted this as they usually do, and if that will be two and done and we move on from there.
you know, the Federal Reserve has boxed itself into a corner. If rates were going to go up, they should have gone up long ago. You remember Bernanke was telling us that when the unemployment rate dropped below 6.5%, he raised rates. Well, that hurdle was passed long, long time ago, and they never raised rates. The reason why they don't raise rates is because the U.S. government cannot afford to pay a fair rate of interest. This is a point that I've been making for quite some time. So all you're seeing from the Federal Reserve is propaganda. Now, the Federal Reserve credibility has been basically destroyed by not raising rates already. As a consequence, they may try to raise interest rates an eighth or a quarter of a point to try to regain that credibility. But if they do, I think the markets are just going to react negatively to that rate increase, because the markets now are not expecting any rate increase this year. So I think it's going to be more of the same, or the Fed's going to try to do more of the same. But as I say, they've boxed themselves in.
I've been on record now for 6 months, convinced just from reading sort of between the lines, the rhetoric stemming from Fed officials, for instance, the Jackson Hole meeting, James Bullard's comments last week, and several of the other Fed heads have just convinced me. And I know there's going to be lots of listeners hearing our voices saying, who cares what the Fed's going to do? They're just along for the ride. But they still have a pretty solid howitzer. We just all need to keep that in mind. All right. We mentioned briefly currency volatility. Clearly, the U.S. dollar, the greenback, has been remarkably strong for a year. Does a year a trend make? Is this a flash in the pan? Or are we looking at a new sustainable theme in the U.S. dollar?
No, I don't think it is sustainable. What's happened is the U.S. dollar has been the choice simply because it's the least bad alternative. The euro, you know, has its problems, which are quite serious. British pound has problems. Japanese yen has problems. Chinese yuan has problems. You know, so where do you put your liquidity? People have moved into the U.S. dollar. The next big move is going to be when people understand that the U.S. dollar's got problems too, and that liquidity is going to go into the precious metals. And as we look toward the end of the year, I think we're going to see strength in the precious metals. You know, we've been in a basing pattern now for a couple of years, and so far attempts to break out of that base have been turned down. But we have an important divergence that's formed. You know, silver went to a new low in August, and gold did not confirm. Usually that's a signal when you get divergences like that, that the markets are ready to reverse course. So I'm pretty optimistic here looking toward the end of the year that I think we're going to see both precious metals, both gold and silver, move higher. And my expectation would be that silver will lead simply because it's the cheaper of the two precious metals. It's more undervalued than gold. Even though gold is undervalued, silver is even more undervalued.
You know, that's interesting because I don't know that we could really say the beginning of the last bull market in, let's say, 2001, really depends on what your metric is, in the precious metals, the 12-year gold rally. Can we really say that AG led the rally? I mean, from my perspective, what really garnered my attention following the internet bubble, I mean, I was looking around, is there going to be another bull market? And my eyes were fixed on the inverted head and shoulders, triple bottom, and the XAU. It really was the XAU. And I just thought, this is one of the most interesting basing patterns I have seen, and this thing is going to have legs. I would love to see the XAU show some relative strength juxtaposed against the underlying metals. Any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, the XAU is impacted quite a lot by the currency appreciation and the price of gold in different currencies. So, for example, the South African stocks have done generally better than the American stocks or the U.S. stocks because the price of gold has risen in South African rand terms, but has not really gone anywhere in terms of the U.S. dollar. So you're getting these cross currents in the XAU. But my view is that if both gold and silver move higher as we move toward the end of the year, the mining stocks will move higher as well, simply because the mining stocks, again, are extremely undervalued, particularly some of these major producers that are still paying dividends and generating good cash flow, even at these price levels.
Last week, we heard from the second in charge at the Fed, Stanley Fischer, one of the Fed governors, and he certainly, I think, indicated there there is some ambiguity among them. They're not all lined up. Not all of the officials there, not all of our policymakers are convinced we need a rate hike. And I know we've already touched on this, but the GDP revision, you might recall, 2.3% up to 3.7% from the second quarter. That seems to indicate that economic conditions might be a touch more robust than our officials were anticipating. And in that environment, do you think that we might see a really solid buy opportunity, an unexpected capitulation moment across most markets, particularly equities, commodities, and whatnot?
Yeah, I think that there won't be capitulation in the stock market. But basically what you're, in other words, I think you may continue to go lower if they do start raising rates. But you really have to focus on the dollar here. The Fed's got two alternatives. They either save the dollar or they trash the dollar. If they trash the dollar, the stock market in nominal dollar terms will rise. If they save the dollar, the stock market's going to fall. So we just have to watch very carefully what the Fed's ultimately going to do action-wise and what the impact that's going to have on the U.S. dollar. But remember, when you see these Fed pronouncements, they only tell you what they want you to hear. That may not necessarily be the whole truth. So you've got to look through the announcements, read between the lines, and actually see what the markets themselves are doing and just basically follow those trends. And right now, the trend in the stock market is clearly, it's clearly turned. But we've seen this before back in 2011, and we bounced to new highs, or we, made new highs. So let's just watch and see how it develops over the next couple of weeks.
Who knows exactly how things will play out, because we've watched some interesting, I think, policy changes from Beijing. The People's Bank of China obviously reversed course on its dollar accumulation, or, U.S. Treasury accumulation, and that $3.6 trillion in U.S. Treasuries, primarily in their national stockpile. Considerable selling going on, to approaching maybe even one-third to a half a trillion dollars of U.S. Treasuries. That has to be absorbed by the market. To me, the buyer of last resort is most likely the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, I agree. And if they're the buyer of last resort, that means they're going to trash the dollar. Yeah, you're raising a good point, because when times get tough, each country will act in its own best interests, regardless of what they may say to their neighbors. And what we're seeing here, times are tough in China, and as a consequence, they've been selling U.S. Treasuries, and that's obviously going to have an impact. But so far, it's just been a trickle of selling by the Treasuries. We'll see whether the Chinese stock markets continue to fall and whether or not the Chinese government's going to sell more Treasuries to try to prop up stocks.
Well, I think on that note, we can wrap up today. Please tell people more about the services you provide at Gold Money, and if we can expect any more best-selling tomes?
Yeah, the last book, The Money Bubble, is, I think, still, even though it came out in 2014, is still very timely in terms of what it has to say, because it focuses on these points we've been discussing about the dollar, the money bubble, and what to do next, or what to do before it pops. So that's the latest book. Nothing else in the works, but you can also find my stuff at goldmoney.com, or, we're now part of Gold Money Incorporated, the Toronto listed company, and therefore bitgold.com.
We appreciate your thoughts. We'd like to hear from you again, especially after we finally see what the Federal Reserve does and just how that impacts the markets. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Hey, Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Harkening back several weeks to the State of the Union address, the President indicated in no uncertain terms that anyone claiming America's economy is in decline is peddling fiction. This statement was picked up by many news outlets, but not supported with too many facts, or for that matter, any kind of significant or meaningful discussion on what ultimately will be one of the, if not the primary election driver, which is the economy. Remember, it's the economy, stupid. But we don't hear that term bandied about much by the mainstream media anymore. They might hurt someone's feelings by referring to them as stupid. In fact, they'd have to hurt a whole lot of feelings, because one subject that is conveniently absent in any detail from the grand sideshow we call the presidential debates is, in fact, a meaningful conversation about the economy. There's no facts, no figures, no context, no demonstration that any of the candidates understand, empathize, or have any kind of remote plan to address the challenges faced by tens of millions of Americans. Everyone was more concerned with Donald Trump's absence from the recent Republican debate and the estimated per-minute loss in advertising revenue for Fox News from $750,000 per minute to an estimated $150,000 per minute. When, for a lot of Americans, if they don't have health insurance in place by January 31st, a $695 tax penalty goes into effect for 2016. There's also the 50 million people on food stamps, the countless students with loan debt obligations and no job prospects coming out of college. There's also a laundry list of other skewed statistics, including unemployment and other official stats. But I'll refrain from revisiting those numbers, at least for this discussion. Otherwise, I might be labeled as peddling fiction in what will soon be 9 years of Goldseek commentaries. And in a move that will make things look good here in the U.S., at least for a while, the Bank of Japan, in a surprise decision, all of a sudden decided to push key interest rates into negative territory that some say could push the Federal Reserve to ease up on its plans to steadily raise interest rates in 2016. I've said it before that the Fed would not, could not raise rates in a meaningful way in 2016. And lo and behold, just like a deck of TV magic cards, in a snap, we have a potential reason for the Fed not to raise rates again this year. Let's watch how this one plays out. And let's watch how the greatest sideshow, also known as the presidential debates, plays out as well. Because everything that seems to matter shouldn't. And everything they're trying to tell us doesn't matter should. The calling of America, the middle class, and the American dream has been underway for quite some time. Only you can rise above it. And only you can do something about it. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter @ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.